Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC, offering a broad range of cardiac and vascular treatments in our community. More information is available at upmc.com/centralpaheart.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. More than 107,000 people died of drug overdoses in the U.S. last year. That's a 50% increase over 2019, which indicates the COVID-19 pandemic was deadly in more ways than one. Those statistics come from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In Pennsylvania, 5,162 people died of drug overdoses in 2020, and the incomplete numbers for 2021 show 124 people were killed by overdoses. Most of the overdose deaths were linked to fentanyl, a synthetic opioid that is 50 times more powerful than heroin. Joining us on today's program is Stephen Ross, Special Assistant to the Secretary with the Pennsylvania Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs. Secretary Ross, welcome to the program. Do we know why there are so many overdose deaths, or why so many have increased over the past few years?
Yeah, sure. I think that when the numbers peaked back in 2017, the governor declared a disaster declaration, and a lot of efforts were put in place on a statewide level, as well as nationally and locally, and those numbers started to come down. We saw marking decreases in both 2018 and 2019. And then when 2020 hit, the numbers just reversed and started to skyrocket again. And we know that's in conjunction with the pandemic. Loss of loved ones, loss of lives, loss of jobs. We noticed a significant increase in substance use disorder and equally mental health issues as well. The isolation of the pandemic caused a lot of depression and anxiety for folks. And we started to see a lot of folks that were in recovery relapsing and using again, and overdoses occurring. And I think that the pandemic itself was a large reason for why these numbers are starting to spike again. But so, additionally, we also have the increased fentanyl, the increased use of fentanyl being imported brought into our country. And I think that continued use of fentanyl is what we're seeing, because it's not just heroin anymore. We're seeing a significant spike in polysubstance abuse. We're finding fentanyl laced in so many of the different drugs that folks are using today.
So just so we have some context, what is fentanyl?
Fentanyl is a very powerful synthetic opioid. It's much, much more powerful than morphine or heroin, and it doesn't take much to kill somebody. It's a synthetically produced drug that is much, much more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Now, fentanyl, you said coming into the United States. Where is it coming from?
A lot of it comes from outside of our borders. It's been produced in Mexico and shipped across the borders. It's been found to be mailed from other countries. But most of it's produced outside of the country and then brought in.
Because it is synthetic, it can be, I don't know whether manufactured is the word, but made. Is there any evidence that more of it was being made here in the United States during the pandemic? Or is it almost all being imported from Mexico and at one time China?
Right. And I'm probably not the one to answer that question per se. From what we've heard anecdotally, we're more focused on the treatment aspect of it and what happens to the folks once they use it. Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, those buying heroin or whatever drug they're purchasing, they don't know for the most part whether it contains fentanyl. Is that correct?
You're right. There are a lot of efforts now on the table in terms of harm reduction efforts, syringe service programs, and particularly fentanyl test strips. you know, where folks can test the substances before they use them. And so, you know, harm reduction is a sometimes controversial subject with people on both sides of the street, you know, but we have found that, you know, evidence support in other areas, in other states or other parts of the country where these programs have been implemented effectively, that it does reduce the use it does reduce the overdose death numbers. But also more importantly, it creates an opportunity for folks to engage with that individual. You know, it's another opportunity to reach out to that individual and support them and try to get them to access the help that they need.
As you mentioned, there are some states, and I think actually the number of states is growing, that have legalized fentanyl testing strips. Pennsylvania hasn't. You know, what are they? How would you describe a fentanyl testing strip? I mean, how would they be used? And would they save lives?
The test strips are basically just like a dipstick that would be, you know, tested with the substance, and it would turn up to, if it did have fentanyl in it, it would turn a certain color or show you evidence that the fentanyl is there. You know, I do think that it is it will save lives, you know. So it's a worthwhile effort. I do think that the state is supportive of it. Our administration is supportive of it. And there's legislation in place now to try to make sure that it's legalized.
Yeah, it's controversial because they're, you know, just like, you know, monitored sites where there are those who can inject themselves with heroin. You know, it's controversial because there are some people who look at it and say that it promotes the use of the drug. Fentanyl itself, are there people who just use fentanyl that, you know, that's not mixed with any other kind of drug?
I think the problem is you don't know. You know, when folks buy that heroin or stimulant or whatever it is that they're buying that the fentanyl is laced with, they don't know the degree to which fentanyl is in it. It could be pure fentanyl, it could be a little fentanyl or no fentanyl.
And you said much more.
With regards to the fentanyl, with regards to the harm reduction sites that you're talking about, as controversial as it is, we have seen there's evidence that linked that shows that it reduces the number of overdose deaths. But also more importantly, you know, I think that one of the problems that we've recognized is the stigma that's associated with substance use disorder. And, you know, so to have harm reduction sites like that, you know, just supports the fact that, you know, substance use disorder is a disease. You know, I don't think there's anybody that woke up today and said, I want to become a heroin user, you know, or addicted to heroin. You know, it's a disease, not unlike many other diseases. And the more I think we can wrap our brains around that and support for folks, in reducing the stigma, we'll get folks to be more receptive to accessing treatment, the treatment that they need. And I think harm reduction sites are one of these.
So let's talk a little bit about treatment. In 2019, now this is before the pandemic, it was estimated that 20 million people 12 and older had a substance abuse disorder. And this was a statistic that I have to say surprised me somewhat. Only 10% reported receiving care. That's a startling statistic that 90% of those who suffer from substance abuse disorder are not being treated for it. Those statistics, do they surprise you at all?
Well, yeah, it's surprising and disturbing at the same point. You know, I think we have a very pretty wide network of treatment services available across the Commonwealth through a variety of ways to access them. One of the things that we're implementing is a research tool called Atlas, which is a treatment locator tool that'll be coming online within the next few months that can give folks that opportunity, you know, to find services for those who don't already know where the services exist. But I think the problem is, you know, for a lot of people who use substances, you know, first of all, treatment in Pennsylvania is voluntary. So it's up to that individual to say, I need help. And a lot of folks, you know, it takes a while before they hit that bottom, so to speak. And that bottom can be a whole range of different levels. You know, it could be a loss of a job or prison. There's a lot of different ways to get people realize that they really need help.
And I mean, it is so difficult to overcome. We've heard stories over the past few years of people who have suffered multiple overdoses, almost died, you know, were brought back, but almost died, but, you know, then continued to use and overdosed again. I mean, I heard one case of someone, EMT, saying they treated someone 21 times for overdoses. It just shows that it is not like a normal illness, for one thing, but it is a difficult one.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, you know, it certainly is something that once it grabs a hold of you, it's very difficult to get rid of. You know, and again, we have to take a look at this person. And one of the things that we've learned, I think, from the opioid epidemic itself is some of the lessons that, you know, as behavioral health folks and physical health folks, there were opportunities for us to come together and look at the person more holistically. And, you know, you have to take a look at that person, not just their substance use needs, but oftentimes, you know, it comes with a duly diagnosed mental health needs. And then there's physical health complications on top of it. So there's more going on with this person than just the substance use. And if we take a look at how we can help this person from that more holistic manner, I think that we'll be better aimed at, you know, once we get those people into treatment, preventing them from going back out and relapsing, giving them the recovery supports that they need to stay in recovery and stay sober.
At the beginning of the pandemic, there were many treatment centers that closed their doors or at least shut down, couldn't see people in person. Now, many have since reopened. Do we have as many places offering treatment as we did, say, in March of 2020?
Yeah, we still have the same, if not more, numbers of facilities and ways to access treatment. I think that, you know, you touched upon something there that, you know, while the opioid epidemic, as tragic as it was and still is today, you know, if you look for the silver linings in the clouds, you know, you learn certain lessons. And originally with the pandemic hitting those high numbers in 2017, we recognized things like, you know, again, that behavioral health and physical health, maybe there were opportunities for us to play better. We recognized that, you know, it's a community-wide problem and it takes the whole community to solve it. And so locally, on a county-wide level, we saw, you know, opioid coalitions being formed of folks coming together and attacking the problem, you know, from all perspectives and all avenues of life. And I think equally as important when we hit the pandemic, you know, if we look at the pandemic and some of the lessons we've learned there, one of them was the waiver to be able to use telehealth. So while you're right, a lot of the facilities were forced to shut down due to COVID issues, there was a relaxation and a waiver in the ability to use telehealth services. And I think that what we saw was, particularly on an outpatient level, you know, we talk oftentimes about the barriers to treatment, transportation, childcare, whatnot. You know, telehealth relieved those barriers, and we saw more people accessing outpatient services than before the pandemic. So not to say that it's a replacement to face-to-face interviews or counseling, but it's another tool in the toolbox, if you will. And I think that those lessons that we learn are going to benefit us greatly going forward if we implement all the tools.
We focused a lot on fentanyl because most of the overdose deaths have been related to fentanyl. But what about some other drugs out there that are being abused widespread, like methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, mm-hmm. prescription drugs? I mean, are they still, what are the trends there?
Yeah, actually, we've seen a reduction in heroin use. You know, we've seen an increase in stimulant use disorder, and particularly methamphetamine. And so that's why one of the things that we did, you know, previously during the opioid epidemic back in 2016-17, we created the Opioid Command Center, which was primarily focused on opioids. And what we learned that was as the drugs of choice cycle and heroin numbers were going down, but stimulant use disorder was going up, and that most of those polysubstances were laced with fentanyl, what we did was we created the it's called the ICERT, the Interagency Substance Use Response Team, and we changed it from opioids to substance use to address all substances.
And methamphetamine can be manufactured here and is being manufactured here in the United States. So, Mr. Ross, for those who may be listening to this or know someone who is suffering from substance abuse disorder, how can they get treatment?
Yeah, that's a great point, and thank you for bringing that up. Pennsylvania has a Get Help Now hotline. It's a statewide hotline. The number is 1-800-662-HELP or 1-800-662-4357. It's staffed 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and has trained professionals that can help you get connected to whatever level of treatment it is that you need. So please, if you are out there and you are suffering or you know someone that's suffering and they need help, please don't hesitate to reach out to that hotline. Again, the number is 1-800-662-4357.
Stephen Ross is the Special Assistant to the Secretary with the Pennsylvania Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs. Mr. Ross, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.